1st of March always reminds me of the time of the Mahasamadhi of Paramahansa Yogananda and Swami Sri Yukteswarji. For Master, it was March 7th, as we measure it by our calendar. And Sri Yukteswar is March 9th. I think that Earl's song fits in very well with the theme of Mahasamadhi, my life closer to thee. Mahasamadhi, samadhi meaning union or oneness with God. It is a Indian yogic term that means to come into oneness with that absolute consciousness. As Master explains it, there are two stages of samadhi. One is the sabbakalpa samadhi. In sabbakalpa samadhi, we attain that oneness by going into a deep trance, in which we transcend the body consciousness and the spiritual essence of who we are flows out into the universe. The body appears as though it is dead. The breathing slows down considerably or comes to a complete standstill. The normal thought patterns of the mind cease. The normal reactions to this world comes to a stop. When our spirit escapes from this body consciousness and flows out into the all consciousness, we are no longer confined to this body consciousness. We transcend it. We die to this body consciousness and are born into that universal consciousness. St. Paul said, I rejoice, this isn't exact quote, I don't believe, I rejoice in that I die in the Christ daily. And it is in the meaning of this that he dies to his body consciousness and is born into the Christ consciousness or that all consciousness. You see, Christ doesn't mean a particular individual who lived 2,000 years ago. Christ, or the Anointed One, means that one who has attained their oneness with this all consciousness. And so each and every individual who is living, when they achieve their oneness with that Christ or all consciousness, they too become a Christ or a Christed one. Now, to many, this would sound like sacrilege, proclaiming that all can become that. But it is the message that Jesus brought. It is for this message that he was crucified, that he proclaimed that he was one with God. And even though those of Judaism had looked for, sought for, believed in that one who could become one with God, a Messiah, nevertheless, they denied it when that one came into their presence. And it is not unlike every one of us who actually denies that Christ spirit within our own lives. We too have the harbinger of John the Baptist that comes within our own consciousness, that proclaims that there is something greater, something more profound within our consciousness than we have ever dreamt of before. But most ignore this voice. Most ignore that John the Baptist, that early on intuition, that voice of one crying in the wilderness. And most cling to their delusions, but there are a few who decide to answer that clarion call, who rise to the challenge, and they enter into that path by which they can become one with that all-pervasive, all-inclusive consciousness that is known as Christ. In the East, it is known as Krishna, also as Buddha consciousness. In Taoism, it is known as the Tao. And so it goes from every language and every religion, speaking of the self-same truth. One of the great privileges that we have is in following in the footsteps of these great spiritual masters, starting with Babaji, to Lahari Mahasya, to Swami Sri Yukteswarji, to Paramahansa Yogananda, and to Mother Hamilton. Each one of these illumined beings realized their oneness with that all-pervasive consciousness. And in that realization, they went from the Sabbakalpa Samadhi, where they were in the fixed state, to Nirvikalpa Samadhi. In Mother's case, she never entered the Sabbakalpa state, but went directly into the Nirvikalpa state and stayed in well over a week in that constant state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And that is being able to move about within this body, not being in a fixed body state, and yet retaining that union of consciousness. Master described the first time he entered into the Sabbakalpa Samadhi by the instrumentality of Sri Yukteswar. Later, he learned to enter into that Nirvikalpa Samadhi state. And it is through this that we realize our oneness with the infinite source from which we have all come. It is one thing to accept a notion, to accept a proposition or an idea. It is something else to believe in that, to have faith in it. But it is something else yet again to become one with that, for it no longer to be just an idea or even something that we realize occasionally, but becomes a constant knowingness within our own consciousness. This is the state that was attained by each one of these spiritual masters. And because of that, they were able to speak to each one of us of the truth that they have brought to this world for every one of us. It is a liberating truth. At the time of Sri Yukteswar's leaving his body in Maha Samadhi, Maha meaning great, supreme, and it is at the point when a realized yogi, one who has realized their oneness with that supreme consciousness, enters into complete union and leaves this body behind as a well-worn garment that they are now taking off. So many of us see death as something of a finality, there is a curtain that is drawn. And behind that curtain, we cannot see. At the time of Sri Yukteswar's leaving his body, Master was thrown into despair. Even though he had realized his oneness with God, his attachment was yet there for Sri Yukteswar. And because of that attachment, he felt separate from God and from his Master at the moment of his separation from the body. But in this wonderful chapter, The Resurrection of Sri Yukteswar, Master describes the resurrection or the manifestation of Sri Yukteswar as a physical body once again. So I thought I would read to you from that chapter. Chapter 43 of the Autobiography of a Yogi, The Resurrection of Sri Yukteswar. Lord Krishna, the glorious form of the avatar, appeared in a shimmering blaze as I sat in my room at the Regent Hotel in Bombay, shining over the roof of a high building across the street. The ineffable vision had suddenly burst on my sight as I gazed out of my long, open third-story window. The divine figure waved to me, smiling and nodding and greeting. When I could not understand the exact message of Lord Krishna, he departed with a gesture of blessing. Wondrously uplifted, I felt that some spiritual event was presaged. My Western voyage had, for the time being, been canceled. I was scheduled for several public addresses in Bombay before leaving on a return visit to Bengal. Sitting on my bed in the Bombay Hotel at 3 o'clock in the afternoon of June 19, 1936, 1 week after the vision of Krishna, I was roused from my meditation by a beatific light. Before my open and astonished eyes, the whole room was transformed into a strange world. The sunlight transmuted into supernal splendor. Waves of rapture engulfed me as I beheld the flesh and blood form of Sri Yukteswar. My son, Master spoke tenderly, on his face an angel-bewitching smile. For the first time in my life, I did not kneel at his feet in greeting, but instantly advanced to gather him hungrily in my arms. Moment of moments, the anguish of past months was toll I counted weightless against the torrential bliss now descending. Master mine, beloved of my heart, why did you leave me? I was incoherent in an excess of joy. Why did you let me go to the Kumbh Mela? How bitterly I have blamed myself for leaving you. I did not want to interfere with your happy anticipation of seeing the pilgrimage spot where I first met Babaji. I left you only for a little while. Am I not with you again? But is it you, Master, the same Lion of God? Are you wearing a body like the one I buried beneath the cruel Puri sands? Yes, my child, I am the same. This is a flesh and blood body. Though I see it as ethereal, to your sight it is physical. From the cosmic atoms, I created an entirely new body, exactly like the cosmic dream physical body, which you laid beneath the dream sands at Puri in your dream world. I am in truth resurrected. Not on Earth, but on an astral planet. Its inhabitants are better able than earthly humanity to meet my lofty standards. There you and your exalted loved ones shall someday come to be with me. Deathless Guru, tell me more. Master gave a quick, mirthful chuckle. Please, dear one, he said, won't you relax your hold a little? Only a little, I had been embracing him with an octopus grip. I could detect the same faint, fragrant, natural odor which had been characteristic of his body before. The thrilling touch of his divine flesh still persists around the inner sides of my arms and in my palms whenever I recall those glorious hours. As prophets are sent on earth to help men work out their physical karma, so I have been directed by God to serve on an astral planet as a savior, Sri Yukteswar explained. It is called Hiranyaloka, or illumined astral planet. There I am aiding advanced beings to rid themselves of astral karma and thus attain liberation from astral rebirths. The dwellers on Hiranyaloka are highly developed spiritually. All of them had acquired in their last earth incarnation the meditation-given power of consciously leaving their physical bodies at death. No one can enter Hiranyaloka unless he has passed on earth beyond the state of Sabbakalpa Samadhi into the higher state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. The Hiranyaloka inhabitants have already passed through the ordinary astral spheres, where nearly all beings from earth must go at death. There they worked out many seeds of their past actions in astral worlds. None but advanced beings can perform such redemptive work effectually in the astral worlds. Then, in order to free their souls more fully from the cocoon of karmic traces lodged in their astral bodies, these higher beings were drawn by cosmic law to be reborn with new astral bodies on Hiranyaloka, the astral sun or heaven, where I have resurrected to help them. There are also highly advanced beings on Hiranyaloka who have come from the superior subtler causal world. My mind was now in such perfect attunement with my gurus that he was conveying his word pictures to me partly by speech and partly by thought transference. I was thus quickly receiving his idea tabloids. You have read in the scriptures, Master went on, that God encased the human soul successively in three bodies, the idea or causal body, the subtle astral body, seat of man's mental and emotional natures, and the gross physical body. On earth, a man is equipped with his physical senses. An astral being works with his consciousness and feelings and a body made of lifetrons. A causal-bodied being remains in the blissful realm of ideas. My work is with those astral beings who are preparing to enter the causal world. Adorable Master, please tell me more about the astral cosmos. Though I had slightly relaxed my embrace at Sri Yukteswar's request, my arms were still around him. Treasure beyond all treasures, my guru who had laughed at death, to reach me. There are many astral planets teeming with astral beings, Master began. The inhabitants use astral planes, or masses of light, to travel from one planet to another, faster than electricity and radioactive energies. The astral universe, made of various subtle vibrations of light and color, is hundreds of times larger than the material cosmos. The entire physical creation hangs like a little solid basket under the huge luminous balloon of the astral sphere. Just as many physical suns and stars roam in space, so there are also countless astral, solar, and stellar systems. Their planets have astral suns and moons more beautiful than the physical ones. The astral luminaries resemble the aurora borealis, the sunny astral aura being more dazzling than the mild rayed moon aurora. The astral day and night are longer than those of Earth. The astral world is infinitely beautiful, clean, pure, and orderly. There are no dead planets or barren lands. The terrestrial blemishes, weeds, bacteria, insects, snakes, are absent. Unlike the variable climates and seasons of the Earth, the astral planets maintain the even temperature of an eternal spring, with occasional luminous white snow and rain of many colored lights. Astral planets abound in opal lakes and bright seas and rainbow rivers. The ordinary astral universe, not the subtler astral heaven of Hiranyaloka, is peopled with millions of astral beings who have come more or less recently from the Earth, and also with myriads of fairies, mermaids, fishes, animals, goblins, gnomes, demigods, and spirits, all residing on different astral planets in accordance with karmic qualifications. Various spheric mansions or vibratory regions are provided for good and evil spirits. Good ones can travel freely, but the evil spirits are confined to limited zones. In the same way that human beings live on the surface of the earth, worms inside the soil, fish in the water, and birds in the air, so astral beings of different grades are assigned to suitable vibratory quarters. Among the fallen dark angels expelled from other worlds, friction and war take place with lifetronic bonds or mental mantric vibratory rays. These beings dwell in the gloom-drenched regions of the lower astral cosmos, working out their evil karma. In the vast realms above the dark astral prison, all is shining and beautiful. The astral cosmos is more naturally attuned than the earth to the divine will and plan of perfection. Every astral object is manifested primarily by the will of God, and partially by the will call of astral beings. They possess the power of modifying or enhancing the grace and form of anything already created by the Lord. He has given his astral children the freedom and privilege of changing or improving at will the astral cosmos. On earth, a solid must be transformed into liquid or other form through natural or chemical processes. But astral solids are changed into astral liquids, gases, or energy solely and instantly by the will of the inhabitants. The earth is dark with warfare and murder in sea, land, and air, my guru continued. But the astral realms know a happy harmony and equality. Astral beings dematerialize or materialize their forms at will. Flowers or fish or animals can metamorphose themselves for a time into astral men. All astral beings are free to assume any form and can easily commune together. No fixed, definite, natural law hems them round. Any astral tree, for example, can be successfully asked to produce an astral mango or other desired fruit, flower, or indeed any other object. Certain karmic restrictions are present, but there are no distinctions in the astral world about desirability of various forms. Everything is vibrant with God's creative light. No one is born of woman. Offspring are materialized by the astral beings through the help of their cosmic will into specially patterned astrally condensed forms. The recently physical disembodied being arrives in an astral family through invitation drawn by similar mental and spiritual tendencies. The astral body is not subject to cold or heat or other natural conditions. The anatomy includes an astral brain or the thousand-petaled lotus of light, and six awakened centers in the Sushumna, or astral cerebral spinal axis. The heart draws cosmic energy as well as light from the astral brain and pumps it to the astral nerves and body cells or lifetrons. Astral beings can affect their bodies by lifetronic force or by mantric vibrations. The astral body is an exact counterpart of the last physical form. Astral beings retain the same appearance which they possessed in youth in their previous earthly sojourn. Occasionally an astral being chooses, like myself, to retain his old age appearance. Master, emanating the very essence of youth, chuckled merrily. Unlike the spatial, three-dimensional physical world, cognized only by the five senses, the astral spheres are visible to the all-inclusive sixth-sense intuition. Sri Yukteswar went on, by sheer intuitional feeling, all astral beings see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. They possess three eyes, two of which are partly closed. The third and chief astral eye, vertically placed on the forehead, is open. Astral beings have all the outer sensory organs, ears, eyes, nose, tongue, and skin, but they employ the intuitional sense to experience sensations through any part of the body. They can see through the ear or nose or skin. They are able to hear through the eyes or tongue and can taste through the ears or skin and so forth. Man's physical body is exposed to countless dangers and is easily hurt or maimed. The ethereal astral body may occasionally be cut or bruised, but is healed at once by mere willing. Gurudev, are all astral persons beautiful? Beauty in the astral world is known to be a spiritual quality, not an outward conformation, Sri Yukteswar replied. Astral beings, therefore, attach little importance to facial features. They have the privilege, however, of costuming themselves at will with new, colorful, astrally materialized bodies. Just as worldly men don new array for gala events, so astral beings find occasions to bedeck themselves in specially designed forms. Joyous astral festivities on the higher astral planets, like Hiranyaloka, take place when a being is liberated from the astral world through spiritual advancement and is therefore ready to enter the heaven of the causal world. On such occasions, the invisible Heavenly Father and the saints who are merged in Him materialize themselves into bodies of their own choice and join the astral celebration. In order to please His beloved devotee, the Lord takes any desired form. If the devotee worships through devotion, he sees God as the Divine Mother. To Jesus, the Father aspect of the Infinite One was appealing beyond other conceptions. The individuality with which the Creator has endowed each of His creatures makes every conceivable and inconceivable demand on the Lord's versatility. My Guru and I laughed happily together. Friends of other lives easily recognize one another in the astral world. Sri Yukteswar went on in his beautiful flute-like voice. Rejoicing at the immortality of friendship, they realize the indestructibility of love, often doubted at the time of the sad, delusive partings of earthly life. The intuition of astral beings pierces through the veil and observes human activities on earth. But man cannot view the astral world unless his sixth sense is somewhat developed. Thousands of earth dwellers have momentarily glimpsed an astral being or an astral world. The advanced beings on Hiranyaloka remain mostly awake in ecstasy during the long astral day and night. helping to work out intricate problems of cosmic government and the redemption of prodigal sons, earthbound souls. When the Hiranyaloka beings sleep, they have occasional dreamlike astral visions. Their minds are usually engrossed in the conscious state of highest nirvikalpa samadhi. Inhabitants in all parts of the astral worlds are still subject to mental agonies. The sensitive minds of higher beings on planets like Hiranyaloka feel keen pain at any mistake is made in conduct or perception of truth. These advanced beings endeavor to attune their every act and thought with the perfection of spiritual law. Communication among the astral inhabitants is held entirely by astral telepathy and television. There is none of the confusion and misunderstanding of the written and spoken word which the earth dwellers must endure. Just as persons on the cinema screen appear to move and act through a series of light pictures and do not actually breathe, so the astral beings walk and work as intelligently guided and coordinated images of light without the necessity of drawing power from oxygen. Man depends upon solids, liquids, gases, and energy for sustenance. Astral beings sustain themselves principally by cosmic light. Mastermind, do astral beings eat anything? I was drinking in his marvelous elucidations with the receptivity of all my faculties, mind, heart, and soul. Superconscious perceptions of truth are permanently real and changeless, while fleeting sense experiences, impressions, are never more than temporarily or relatively true, and soon lose in memory all their vividness. My guru's words were so penetratingly imprinted on the parchment of my being that at any time, by transferring my mind to the superconscious state, I can clearly relive the divine experience. Luminous ray-like vegetables abound in the astral soils, he answered. The astral beings consume vegetables and drink a nectar flowing from the glorious fountains of light and from astral brooks and rivers. Just as invisible images of persons on earth can be dug out of the ether and made visible by a television apparatus, later being dismissed again into space, so the God-created unseen astral blueprints of vegetables and plants floating in the ether are precipitated on an astral planet by the will of its inhabitants. In the same way, from the wildest fancy of these beings, whole gardens of fragrant flowers are materialized, returning later to the etheric invisibility. Although dwellers in the heavenly planets like Hiranyaloka are almost freed from any necessity of eating, still higher is the unconditioned existence of almost completely liberated souls in the causal world, who eat nothing save the manna of bliss. The earth-liberated astral being meets a multitude of relatives, fathers, mothers, wives, husbands, and friends acquired during different incarnations on earth. As they appear from time to time in various parts of the astral realms, he is therefore at a loss to understand whom to love especially. He learns in this way to give divine and equal love to all as children and individualized expressions of God. Though the outward appearance of loved ones may have changed, more or less according to the development of new qualities in the latest life of any particular soul, the astral being employs his unerring intuition to recognize all those once dear to him in other planes of existence and to welcome them to their new astral home. Because every atom in creation is inextinguishable, inextinguishably dowered with individuality, an astral friend will be recognized no matter what costume he may don Even as on earth, an actor's identity is discoverable by close observation despite any disguise. The span of life in the astral world is much longer than on earth. A normal advanced astral being's average life period is from 500 to 1,000 years, measured in accordance with earthly standards of time. As certain redwood trees outlive most trees by millenniums, or as some yogis live several hundreds of years, though most men die before the age of 60, so some astral beings live much longer than the usual span of astral existence. Visitors to the astral world dwell there for a longer or shorter period in accordance with the weight of their physical karma, which draws them back to earth within a specified time. The astral being does not have to contend painfully with death at the time of shedding his luminous body. Many of these beings nevertheless feel slightly nervous at the thought of dropping their astral form for a subtler causal one. The astral world is free from unwilling death, disease, and old age. These three dreads are the curse of earth, where man has allowed his consciousness to identify itself wholly with a frail physical body requiring constant aid from air, food, and sleep in order to exist at all. Physical death is attended by the disappearance of breath and the disintegration of fleshly cells. Astral death consists in the disbursement of life trons, those manifest units of energy which constitute the life of astral beings. At physical death, a being loses his consciousness of flesh and becomes aware of his subtle body in the astral world. Experiencing astral death in due time, a being thus passes from the consciousness of astral death and birth to that of physical birth and death. These recurrent cycles of astral and physical encasements are the ineluctable destiny of all unenlightened beings. Scriptural definitions of heaven and hell sometimes stir man's deeper than subconscious memories of his long series of experiences in the blithesome astral and disappointing terrestrial worlds. Beloved Master, I ask, will you please describe more in detail the difference between rebirth on earth and in the astral and causal spheres? Man as an individualized soul is essentially causal bodied, my guru explained. That body is a matrix of 35 ideas required by God as the basic or causal thought forces from which he later formed the subtle astral body of 19 elements and the gross physical body of 16 elements. The 19 elements of the astral body are mental, emotional, and lifetronic. The 19 components in the intelligence, ego, feeling, mind, sense consciousness, 5 instruments of knowledge, the subtle counterparts of the senses of sight, hearing, smell, taste, touch, 5 instruments of action, the mental correspondence for executive abilities to procreate, excrete, talk, walk, and exercise manual skill, and 5 instruments of life force, those empowered to perform the crystallizing, assimilating, eliminating, metabolizing, and circulating functions of the body. This subtle astral encasement of 19 elements survives the death of the physical body, which is made up of 16 gross metallic and non-metallic elements. God thought out different ideas within himself and projected them into dreams. Lady Cosmic Dream thus sprang out, decorated in all her colossal, endless ornaments of relativity. In 35 thought categories of the causal body, God elaborated all the complexities of man's 19 astral and 16 physical counterparts. By condensation of vibratory forces, first subtle, then gross, he produced man's astral body and finally his physical form, according to the law of relativity, by which this prime simplicity has become the bewildering manifold. The causal cosmos and the causal body are different from the astral cosmos and astral body. The physical cosmos and the physical body are likewise characteristically at variance with the other forms of creation. The fleshly body is made of fixed, objectified dreams of the Creator. The dualities are ever present on earth. Disease and health, pain and pleasure, loss and gain. Human beings find limitations and resistance in the three-dimensional matter. When man's desire to live is severely shaken by disease or other causes, death arrives. The heavy overcoat of the flesh is temporarily shed. The soul, however, remains encased in the astral and causal bodies. The adhesive force by which all three bodies are held together is desire. The power of unfulfilled desires is the root of all man's slavery. Physical desires are rooted in egotism and sense pleasures. The compulsion or temptation of sensory experience is more powerful than the desire force connected with astral attachments or causal perceptions. Astral desires center around enjoyment in terms of vibration. Astral beings enjoy the ethereal music of the spheres and are entranced by the sight of all creation as exhaustless expressions of changing light. The astral beings also smell, taste, and touch light. Astral beings are thus connected with an astral being's power to precipitate all objects and experiences as forms of light or as condensed thoughts or dreams. Causal desires are fulfilled by perception only. The nearly freed beings who are encased only in the causal body see the whole universe as realizations of the dream ideas of God. They can materialize anything and everything in sheer thought. Causal beings, therefore, consider the enjoyment of physical sensations or astral delights as gross and suffocating to the soul's fine sensibilities. Causal beings work out their desires by materializing them instantly. Those who find themselves covered only by the delicate veil of the causal body can bring universes into manifestation, even as the Creator. Because all creation is made of the cosmic dream texture, the soul thinly clothed in the causal has vast realizations of power. A soul, being invisible by nature, can be distinguished only by the presence of the mere presence of a body signifies that its existence is made possible by unfulfilled desires. So long as the soul of man is encased in one, two, or three body containers sealed. I did not know how much I would read of this, but I find myself entranced by it. So if you'll all come with me. He cannot merge with the sea of spirit. When the gross physical receptacle is destroyed by the hammer of the gross physical, when the gross physical receptacle is destroyed by the hammer of death, the two other coverings, astral and causal, still remain to prevent the soul from consciously joining the omnipresent life. When desirelessness is attained through wisdom, its power disintegrates the two remaining vessels. The tiny human soul merges free at last. It is one with the measureless amplitude. I ask my divine guru to shed further light on the high and mysterious causal world. The causal world is indescribably subtle, he replied. In order to understand it, one would have to possess such tremendous powers of concentration that he could close his eyes and visualize the astral cosmos and the physical cosmos in all their vastness, the luminous balloon with the solid basket, as existing in ideas only. If by this superhuman concentration one succeeded in converting or resolving the two cosmoses with all their complexities into sheer ideas, he would then reach the causal world and stand on the borderline of fusion between mind and matter. There one perceives all created things, solids, liquids, gases, electricity, and energy, all beings, gods, men, animals, plants, bacteria, as forms of consciousness. Just as a man can close his eyes and realize that he exists, even though his body is invisible to his physical eyes and is present only as an idea. Whatever a human being can do in fancy, a causal being can do in reality. The most colossal imaginative human intelligence is able, in mind only, to range from one extreme thought to another, to skip mentally from planet to planet, or tumble endlessly down a pit of eternity, or soar rocket-like into the galaxied canopy, or scintillate like a searchlight over Milky Ways and starry spaces. But beings in the causal world have much greater freedom and can effortlessly manifest their thoughts into instant objectivity without any material or astral obstruction or karmic limitation. Astral beings realize that the physical cosmos is not primarily constructed of electrons, nor is the astral cosmos basically composed of lifetrons. Both in reality are created from their minutest particles of God thought, chopped and divided by Maya, the law of relativity that apparently intervenes to separate creation from its creator. Souls in the causal world recognize one another as individualized points of joyous spirit. Their thought things are the only objects that surround them. Causal beings see the difference between their bodies and thoughts to be merely ideas. As a man, closing his eyes, can visualize a dazzling white light or faint blue haze, so causal beings, by thought alone, are able to see, hear, feel, taste, and touch. They create anything or dissolve anything by the power of cosmic mind. Both death and rebirth in the causal world are in thought. Causal bodied beings, feast only on the ambrosia of eternally new knowledge. They drink from the spring of peace, roam on the trackless soil of perceptions, swim in the ocean endlessness of bliss. Lo, see their bright thought bodies zoom past trillions of spirit-created planets, fresh bubbles of universes, wisdom stars, spectral dreams of golden nebula on the sky bosom of infinity. Many beings remain for thousands of years in the causal cosmos. By deeper ecstasies, the freed soul then withdraws itself from the little causal body and puts on the vastness of the causal cosmos. All the separate eddies of ideas, particularized waves of power, love, will, joy, peace, intuition, calmness, self-control, and concentration melt into the ever-joyous sea of bliss. No longer does the soul have to experience its joy as an individualized wave of consciousness, but is merged into the one cosmic ocean with all its waves, eternal laughter, thrills, throbs. When a soul is out of the cocoon of the three bodies, it escapes forever from the law of relativity and becomes the ineffable, ever-existent. Behold the butterfly of omnipresence, its wings etched with stars and moons and suns. The soul expanded into spirit remains alone in the region of lightless light, darkless dark, thoughtless thought, intoxicated with its ecstasy of joy in God's dream of cosmic creation. A free soul, I ejaculated in awe. When a soul finally gets out of the three jars of bodily delusions, Master continued, it becomes one with the infinite, without any loss of individuality. Christ has won this final freedom even before he is born as Jesus. In three stages of his past, symbolized in his earth life as the 3 days of his experience of death and resurrection, he had attained the power to fully arise in spirit. The undeveloped man must undergo countless earthless and astral and causal incarnations in order to emerge from his three bodies. A master who achieves his final freedom may elect to return to earth as a prophet to bring other human beings back to God, or like myself may choose to reside in the astral cosmos. There a savior assumes some of the burden of its inhabitants' karma and thus helps them to terminate their cycle of reincarnation in the astral cosmos and go on permanently to the causal cosmos, or a freed soul may enter the causal world to aid its beings to shorten their span in the causal body and thus attain absolute freedom. Only when a being has no further desires for experiences in the pleasing to the eye astral cosmos and cannot be tempted to go back there does he remain in the causal world, completing there the work of redeeming all causal karma or seeds of past desires. The confined soul thrusts out the last of the three corks of ignorance, and emerging from that final jar of causal body, comingless with the eternal, commingles with the eternal. Now do you understand? Master smiled so enchantingly. Yes, through your grace, I am speechless with joy and with gratitude. Never from song or story had I ever received such inspiring knowledge. Though the Hindu scriptures refer to the causal and astral worlds and to man's three bodies, how remote and meaningless those pages compared with the warm authenticity of my resurrected master. For him indeed existed not a single undiscovered country from whose born no traveler returns. What a grand and marvelous vision that Master paints before us. And I felt, as perhaps you felt, that during the reading, that these visions unfolded before my own mind's eye. And seeing the supernal freedom of this infinite and vast universe, we walk around on this little mud ball of the earth, thinking that we have some importance. I think God's greatest sense of humor is when we draw a line on the earth and we say, on this side is mine, and on this side is yours. It is indeed a great sense of the cosmic joke that we are these eternally freed beings. The good news is that even while we live within this earthly body, we can attain to this tremendous omnipresent spirit of which we have all come, of which we are all eternally a part, and to which we will all return when our will desires it. When I was born into this earthly body, came into a family, I oftentimes, as perhaps some of you may have, thought that I was born into the wrong family. There is something amiss here. As I compared this earthly family with something almost of a memory And one day I had a vision, and in that vision was a memory. The memory was of my astral family. They were marvelous, I can tell you. They were wise beyond compare. And they were wonderful and loving and warm. And I realized in this memory of these astral parents that I had had, why, when I compared my earthly family, they seemed to come up so short to this fresh memory from this vision that I had had. I realized that I was comparing my small earthly family with these wonderful luminous beings of my astral family. But they had guaranteed me, as I had come to this earthly incarnation, that there would be those that would bring comfort to me, because I knew that it was going to be a difficult time on this earth. And I realized that the one that they had spoken of was my own guru, who had transcended the physical as well as the astral, as well as the causal. She taught me truth, and in that truth I recognized a great light, and in that light I recognized the reflection of my own soul. Indeed, each and every one of us have that same light, have that same capacity to reach out for light unlimited. And that is why we all gather here, is to reach out for that light, to transcend barriers of the physical, of the astral, and the causal. That all three realms hold their charms, there is no doubt. But none hold a candle, so to speak, to that great omniscient spirit of which we are all part and parcel. Why contain ourselves to these small earthly vessels? You do not have to kill this earthly vessel in order to transcend it, nor do you have to kill the astral vessel, nor the causal vessel. Killing is a word that is used in the scriptures, but it does not mean to put an end to it in the way that we think of it. There is no great virtue in dying. People, millions of people die every day. They leave this earthly abode and go on to their astral worlds. But what is truly the noble thing to do is to die to the desire nature, to that very aspect that keeps us bound to this earthly body. How do we do this? By transferring our allegiance to that universal Christ consciousness of which we are all a part. I want us to dispel of the word Christ and attaching it to only a single person, and to recognize its original meaning as that universal divine light, meaning the anointed one, or anyone who has entered into that universal consciousness. There were those before Jesus who had attained to that consciousness, and there have been many since. So it is wrong to ascribe that to a singular individual. In the first of John, it says, it is the light that became the flesh, and that is the flesh of every man. Not just one. It is the word, or that vibration of perfection of spirit. And when you release yourself from this physical and astral and causal bodies, you go through that star that is at the center of your forehead, and you go into the light of pure being. And you expand in infinite reaches on wave after wave of that light. There is no circumference to your being. You are beyond description. And there is no sense of ego about it. But you have died to that part that would have been egotistical about it. You just simply die into that light, into that fathomless ocean of spirit. And the joy, and the thrill, and the realization, and the power that comes from that is inconceivable by human standards. And when you attain to that, you realize what your true nature is. And then you can remain, if you will, even on a causal plane or on an astral plane or even on a physical plane. Sri Yukteswar, before leaving this body, had attained that highest consciousness. He could have gone into God Absolute, or he could have gone as a savior to the astral cosmos or the causal cosmos or the physical cosmos. And it was the divine will within him that took him to the astral. But this is freedom absolute. If it seems inconceivable to you, then that is part of the idea of separation that is within you, and that which must go. When you see this world as nothing but scintillating energy, and go beyond even that, and see this world as nothing but an idea hanging upon God's thought in indescribable subtlety, and go beyond even that, and see yourself as nothing but luminous shining spirit existing within a sea of luminous shining spirit, then you have transcended those three cosmos, and you have brought yourself face to face with God. And it is nothing but an ever-expanding, ever-joyous ocean of spirit. Realization after realization. If you think that scientific discoveries or discoveries of music or art or other such things upon this earth are wonderful and fantastic, which indeed they are nothing compared to the measureless realizations of the stupendous ideas that God has put into motion. Beyond all conceptualization on a human earthly sphere, and yet real beyond anything that we have ever known here. Let me call to you. Let me entice you. Let me tempt you into entering into this highest and most auspicious spirit, putting behind you the toys of this world. Certainly, we have to live in this world, and we have to deal with the things of this world. But your life is made up of so much more. So much more. As I read these words, I felt within myself the ideas, the concepts, the reality unfolding within my own consciousness. Perhaps you had some glimpses of that also. And it is to this region of freedom and absolute light that I wish for all of us to traverse and to explore and to go into that absolute spirit of which we are a part. It's the most wonderful thing when Dr. Lewis, a very highly developed disciple of masters, left his body, and what his wife saw was Sri Yukteswar's face take the place of her own husband's. And it was a sure sign that Dr. Lewis was joining Sri Yukteswar in that most noble astral heaven. But I can assure you there are places beyond that. So let us go in love and peace. Shall we pray? O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body, my mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.